And so I'm going to be, I have a couple of slides I want to talk about first, and then what I hope to do is that people here will have questions and we can talk about specific strategies for change. And I'm coming at this from a slightly different perspective from the way we normally talk about these things, which is that I want to center a discussion of how men behave in computer science. I'm making a gross generalization here. I'm assuming that there is some category of men that has some shared experience that we can generalize about. This isn't always true. Certainly, men are as diverse a group as women are. And often, actually, it makes more sense to generalize about the geeky experiences, or there are ways in which men set themselves apart. On the other hand, there are things where if someone looks at someone and reads them as male, they're going to make some assumptions and they're going to behave differently. And so I think that in computer science and software development, this often leads men to respond in certain ways. For example, one thing that came up on the first day was where women were talking about feeling uncomfortable walking home or walking back to a hotel through a dark alley. And the solution was to go and ask someone else to walk with them. And a man expressed that he was also uncomfortable walking home through a dark alley, which makes sense, right? That's logical. But would never go up to someone and ask them to walk him home because that wasn't socially appropriate. Even though we have the same impulse, we respond differently. And I think the major way that we differ in the responses that we give as groups is whether we externalize or internalize. So women tend to internalize things we blame ourselves. If we're upset or we're uncomfortable, we try to figure out what we can change so we can have control over it. Whereas men, as a group, are more likely to blame other people. They're more likely to say, oh, well, they're stupid, they're awful, that's bad. And just they'll leave, they'll go do something else, they'll just rant a lot. Like, you can see this in ADHD diagnoses, is the interesting, really obvious case. So little boys who get bored and can't sit still and can't follow classroom, what's going on in the classroom, end up being angry and violent and disruptive. And so there was a time when it was 10 to 1. Little boys were diagnosed with ADHD 10 times more likely, or were 10 times more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD as little girls. But if you actually do population studies and you just go through and you screen every child, the actual ratio is closer to 2 to 1. Because little girls, when they can't follow what's going on in the classroom, instead of pulling someone's hair, they become anxious and depressed. And so there was this whole population of women who went through school without the diagnoses the little boys were getting because their response wasn't to go out and pull people's hair. And so the first thing that I encounter a lot is if I'm interacting with a group of men and one of them says something negative about someone else, is that I don't necessarily take that at face value the way I would if I was saying something negative about someone else. Like, I've thought through and decided that, like, they deserve blame because I had to overcome my initial response, which was to blame myself for whatever was going on. And oftentimes, if I'm reading Hacker's News or something and someone says, jQuery sucks, right? They probably don't know how to use jQuery. Unless they provide some backup rationale, chances are good that the problem is between the chair and the computer. So the next thing I encounter, and lots of these come up when I'm talking about women in computer science, because the other thing, when you're a woman in computer science, and especially when you're one who maybe, like, you know, I'm pretty masculine in the way I interact with the world, so men feel comfortable with me, like lots of my friends are guys. So they'll come up and ask me the questions that they have that maybe they don't feel comfortable asking their other men friends because they have no idea, and they don't feel comfortable asking women because they're afraid they're going to make them uncomfortable, but, you know, it's a I know them, I have become friends with them, and this world that they feel has been shut off to them comes open. And so the thing I encounter, though, is that when I start talking about this, they get defensive. Because some of them have put a lot of effort. Like, it takes a lot of energy for them to fulfill these requirements that they face, to come across as authoritative, to come across as, to project power and knowledge and all of this. And so, they worked really hard at this, and now they're successful. And so, do you have to give that up? If I'm gonna be an ally to women in computing, do I have to stop doing these things that are the only way I found to get ahead or the only way I found to fit in? You know, I like fantasy football. Does talking about the things that I like alienate other people? And what does that say about me? And so they'd like to, and then they have the option to just go back to ignoring it. And so I'll see this pattern happen where someone will have this realization and they will immediately think, but what would that mean if that was true? And even if it is true, even if you have good evidence, they'll just choose to set it aside. And then it comes to jokes, right? Men will make jokes. I started a group at my company I sent out an email that was like, I would like to get to know women in other departments. Let's do a technical reading group. So as was mentioned earlier, this is it's technically oriented. It's nothing, you know, we're not sitting around discussing feminism all the time. Like, you know, so it's non-threatening to nerds. They understand getting together with technical people, whatever. But one of them still comes by and makes a joke. He says, can men attend? Ha 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 ha. And I realize that I laugh along with it, and I don't make a big deal out of it, but I realize that he really doesn't understand why men wouldn't be allowed to attend. And he just has no context for this, and so he's uncomfortable, and so the way he deals with being uncomfortable is he makes a joke. And so often I'll use the jokes that men make, even if I don't challenge them in the moment, I'll use the knowledge that they give me when I'm having a conversation later. And I'll start from the assumption that he doesn't understand why it would be important to occasionally have a room full of people where you don't stand out. And so the first thing that I might, in some later discussion, you know, the hypotheticals, the metaphors I might use would be to address that point. Next thing is scarcity culture. I don't remember where I first got this, but there's the notion that we behave very differently if we feel like there's not enough of something. You can see this with hummingbirds. If you give them enough food and you give them the option to take a risk, so you could fly this huge long path and maybe get more, or you could eat enough just grazing nearby, they'll never take the long flight. They'll never take the risk. But as soon as they have slightly less food than they need, they'll start taking that risk all the time, even though it results in less food overall. You take those gambles, and you become like a bitter person, basically. If you don't have enough of whatever it is, if we feel like we don't have enough attention, you start interrupting. If you feel like maybe there's a chance your opinion's not gonna be heard, you start shutting down other people so that you can get your opinion out there. And a lot of very masculine culture is based on competition. It's based on who is allowed to speak. And some people are categorically excluded, you know, women, people of color, but there's also behaviors that will lead you to be excluded. There are ways to lose your man card, basically. You'll see this in advertising, that they use this, and it's because it's an effective metaphor, right? There are ways in that, yeah, if you're sitting around with some group of guys and you start talking about your knitting, right? It's awesome, it's really cool, but the response from them is immediately going to be to put you in that category of not like us. I think that women here have probably all had that experience at some point where you're sitting around with some group of guys that you may have interacted with for the last 2 years, and something comes up about a hair care product, and you know the answer, and none of them do. And it's not because you're obsessed with your hair, it's because you've encountered hair care products before. It's like an aisle in the grocery store. How do you not pay attention to these things? And so when we get caught up in the scarcity culture, the feeling, and you get this all the time in software development, we don't have time to test. But if we did this, then project management would have more power, or sales would take credit, or whatever, that there's not enough of things to go around that we can all use. Like, it doesn't take that much effort to share credit. Like, we all work together, we all have stock options in the same company, you know. The notion of open source very much goes against this. And part of the struggle with convincing very masculine MBA people is that they just don't understand the concept that if you release software, that your competitors aren't going to do better. Like, you're going to be able to hire more engineers because they're going to see your good code, right? That there's benefits to sharing is something that just doesn't come up, right? And then this is more, I encounter this with younger guys, especially in college, where they've never been able to have really close relationships yet. They were often somewhat isolated in high school. They may or may not have developed these relationships in college. I mean, women have this too. But unlike women, men are given an out. What you need is a woman, right? You need someone who you can possess and control, and she'll stay home and do your dishes for you. That sounds really nice, right? And all of the romantic comedies and all of the movies tell you that all you have to do to be happy and have this wonderful, fulfilling relationship is find a woman. But there are no women in your classes. And there's no women, and maybe you see them on campus, but they're not in your dorm or your frat, right? Like, they might come to parties, but then you're not really having the conversations that would lead to this ultimate, fulfilling fantasy relationship. You know, it's like how sometimes there are women who would like to have some white knight come and sweep them off to a life of luxury, right? There's nothing wrong with these fantasies until you actually meet a woman or a man and you project them onto them. And if the first woman you meet in your job becomes, excellent, I have met the woman, because they're all interchangeable, and I shall have my lifelong fulfilling relationship with them, then you have a problem. And it becomes this entitlement complex of every woman is universally responsible for fulfilling this role of woman in my life that I've been told, because I externalize, that my loneliness is because I don't have, I didn't get my allocation of woman. Yeah. And they really believe this, and it's so scary that they're going to be alone for the rest of their lives, and it is. It's really silly when you break it down for them. And it does get frustrating, like the 15th or 20th time that you're laying out, going through, so you realize that what you're saying is that half the world's population is responsible for your happiness. Really? And sometimes you can get them over it by doing this, but really, like, it's their job. It's not our job to fix, you know, the 20-year-old, all of 20-year-old men's, you know, fears. That's not on us, you know. But it becomes our problem if we have to interact with them a bunch. And so recognizing the pattern means that conversation can go that much faster as you jump ahead a step or two and convince them that friendship isn't bad. There's nothing bad about having friends. I like citations. I like sending people to articles. They get really frustrated with it, but there's a great article called Men Keep Putting Me in the Girlfriend Zone. that turns around the friend zone. I highly recommend it because it's very straightforward to the point where some dudes understand it. And the next thing I encounter is the response, but I can't treat you the way I treat men. And the follow-up to this is always, because I treat men terribly. Men are, I certainly know that the guys I hung out with in high school were awful to each other. One of them knocked the other one's teeth out with a rattan sword. Like they'd punch, yeah. And so there's parts of this where the problem is that isn't us. The problem is that they realize that they're putting up with a lot of behavior from their friends, you know, all of these insults and tearing each other down that's exhausting for them, but is the how they know how to interact, because those things do create a sense of camaraderie. And so this is the part of it where you say, yes, like that behavior is not acceptable towards anyone. And have you considered trying to do it another way? Like, you can choose to still have those relationships. You can still interact that way with other people, but maybe not at work. Maybe this isn't what we want in a professional environment. Maybe we don't want to have every meeting devolve into a screaming match. Can we do that? And there's cultures where the answer is no. You know, maybe the CEO is really into that. And I think the answer is that you go find another. There are times when the right answer is to find another job. But there are times when men will encounter one of these environments. They'll come to some place where it's mostly women around them, and they'll be really shocked and surprised. Or they'll go overseas, because some of this is America, an American masculine culture, an American masculine nerdy culture, which is different than other places in the world. Not all of them, clearly, and some go worse, and some go better, in my judgmental opinion. But I heard a story of a company where they merged with a German company, and they would go to these meetings, and they would have meetings where both Germans and Americans attended, and they'd come out, and the Americans would assume that everything had been decided in the meeting, and the Germans would come out and assume nothing had been decided in the meeting. Because the Americans would loudly interrupt each other and have this whole discussion, and no one told them that during the meeting that they couldn't do what they had just described, because they were like loudly interrupting each other, so there was no time or pause or anything. And the Germans assumed that because they'd never had a consensus check, that nothing had been decided, and so they'd have time to express their opinions later. And it was just this, it's culture is what we agree culture is. And so I think one thing we can do when guys say, but that's the way I treat men, is to say, well, do you really enjoy that? Like, you know, and just give them options, right? Guys, and women should be able to choose to have those competitive, intense, you know, friendship groups, but it shouldn't be required. It shouldn't be the only option. It shouldn't be the only way to interact with the people around you. So those are the six sort of principles I've seen of how men are trained to interact with the world. And so now it's example time, and I have some I could bring up, but I think it might be more interesting if anyone out there has questions or things that they'd like to talk about. Anything? All right.
So two jobs before my current job. When I was interviewed for the job, I spent an hour and a half talking to the CTO. And one of the things that he emphasized to me was he felt that his team needed more maturity. There was a number of younger engineers, Unix engineers on the team. And he actually had short-circuited the interviews that I had with some other people so that he could spend more time talking to me. So they offered me the job, and I took it. And after I was there for a while, I didn't know his background. And he'd actually founded a company at a previous job. I had used that company's software, and it was awful. It was horrible. And so I made the faux pas of making a negative remark about it during afternoon chat time. We used to all go into office that some of the Unix guys had, and sometimes we would have a beer or eat together or whatever. And so I made a negative remark about that software, and he kind of played it off as a joke and said, "Oh yeah, I remember that company that used that software. They were a pain in our customer service ass. You know, they'd caused us all sorts of problems. Yada yada yada." And so then a couple weeks later, the area that I was sitting in was it was like a bullpen area, and there was three of us who were basically the overflow from the Unix engineer's office that were sat there, and it was right next to marketing. And of course, with the exception of the guy who was in charge of the marketing department and the guy who did statistics for the marketing department, every other person who worked in marketing was female. And the CTO came through there one afternoon, and I don't know what prompted it, and he said, "Oh, it's Nadine, that software-hating bitch." Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know how to respond to that. And, it was just a flip, offhanded remark, like it was no big deal. And so some other things happened, and I ended up having a chat with HR about my situation at the job because of some other things that had happened between me and my manager. And I, in that meeting with HR, I brought up the fact that he had said this in front of all these other people. And so the next day in the afternoon, he came to me and took me aside into a conference room and gave me a not apology. He basically, he formally said, "I apologize," and then he said, "But I didn't mean anything by that. That's just like me referring to the guys on the team as a bunch of bastards." And I said, "I don't think that's appropriate either."
Right.
And I said, "If you remember when you interviewed me for this job, we spent like an hour and a half talking to each other. And you said that one of the things you were looking for on this team was more maturity. Have you considered that perhaps you should set a better example?"
Yeah.
And he was, it was like fish noises. And I was like, "Well, I guess, that's probably all there is to say about this, so." And I got up and left, and needless to say, that job didn't last very much longer. But,
sometimes you just gotta spell it out.
Yeah. Well, and often when people reach for insults and people target us with gendered insults, it's because they were reaching for the most hurtful thing they could say. And so, absolutely, that is awful. And they are reminding us of all of the messages we get that we don't belong here, all that. But that wasn't what they wanted to do in that moment. What they wanted to do in that moment was to hurt us. And in fact, I get more offended when men insult each other by calling them another a woman, right? Ladies, because they're then making some comment about all of womankind, to which I belong, right, sort of, and they're spreading that message to all of the guys, like, "You should feel ashamed." My flippant remark is, feminism will be over when men wear dresses to work, not when women wear pants to work. And I do feel like there's a lot of that sort of, like, then they don't understand. So HR might care more because we have some laws still. But And then they'll be bitter because, well, they'd have gotten away with it if they'd reached for the most insulting thing they could have said to a man. You know, it's, the problem is clearly that we have some laws. I think that you responded absolutely right there, which is to bring it back to how do you want to treat people and how do you want to behave.
So some of this ties back into what Nadine was saying about how you use the term aggressive and it's a positive for a male and it's a negative for a female. Mm-hmm. At one point I was in a discussion with someone and it was getting heated and I think I was winning maybe. but they really lashed out and they were really, really trying to insult me. And so we were chatting, he's like, oh yeah, well that's fine then, doctor. And I was just starting a PhD program. And so I'm like, well, not yet, but okay. Yeah. Is that a bad thing? And it was like, he's like, well, yeah, doctor, you think you're so much smarter. I'm like, no, I don't, but wait, go back and explain to me why that's a bad thing. And it was that he had tried to find some way to assign some sort of negative connotation about a male characteristic onto me.
Right.
And it just, so sometimes just the quick question of like, wait, and then he kept going with his argument. I'm like, no, I really need you to explain this to me because I'm just not catching it.
Right, right. It's so awful that you're so right.
So my personal little crusade that I am on right now at my company and with anybody else who will listen, I mean this sincerely, is that I don't want to make software that is easy enough for my grandmother to use. My grandmother's not an idiot. And your grandmother is not an idiot. And I was in a meeting a couple of months ago with a woman who I'm mentoring. And someone in the room said, well, we need to make software easy enough for moms to use. And my colleague looks and she says, my mom's a sysadmin with 30 years of experience. We're already there. But we don't talk about making software easy enough for our grandfathers to use. We don't talk about making software easy enough for our fathers to use. It's making software easy enough for women to use. And that is something that I really want. First of all, I bring this up every time it comes up in my company. No, 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 your grandmother's not an idiot. She raised you, you're not an idiot, thus she isn't an idiot either. And I also have to admit that I stop it in conversation and say, no, this isn't something. Your grandmother, maybe your grandmother isn't technical, but you know other non-technical people too. It's not that you don't, or that you want it to make it easy for your grandmother. It's that you want it to make it easy for people who don't deeply know the system backwards and forwards.
Right.
And that's a very, very different statement.
Right. And I think that that's actually one of the very useful things to have around as categorical things. So often when men realize that there's some problem, the first instinct is to fix it. I mean, we're all technical people, often our first instinct is to fix it. And if you can't respond with, here are some solutions, here are some steps, like they'll assume that it's because this isn't a real problem, because they can't deal with the ambiguity of there's a problem and there's not a way to fix it. It becomes like this existential crisis that they deal with by deciding to pretend the problem's not there. It's much nicer that way. And so having things like categorical imperatives. You know, it's not your mother. Don't use he as a default male pronoun, as a default pronoun, and assume it applies to everyone. Don't notice gendered insults, and when people around you use them, call them out. Simple and straightforward. That's not cool, dude. Because I assume it's a male speaking, But the idea is to have some easy steps that they can take to make things better. And often, all it does take is convincing, or is to have someone else in the room who doesn't want you to assume they agree with that. And as soon as you can get that cycle communicated, they'll start intervening or just being, and I think the other thing that's useful is to tie it into broader issues. Like, we don't value UX design, and as long as we're talking about it as an add-on extra so that grandma can use this product instead of the people we're really selling to, we're never going to give user experience the central place that it really needs if we're going to make particularly productive, useful software. People hate it when you go through like the assumptions that they made when they made some innocuous statement. And so I seldom spell it out in that much detail unless they're really asking for it. But yeah, all those assumptions are there, or they wouldn't have said the thing. That joke wouldn't be funny unless you were assuming these things about the world.
Okay, so yesterday I enjoyed a lot of the sessions, and I went and talked to my wife about some of the things. She can't be here today, but I wanted to get her impression on some of this. And I related one of the experiences that someone had here where off-color jokes were being made, and probably among guys it would have been just typical, and nobody would be even thinking it was offensive. This is about the micro-aggressive behavior. And she said that she thought her response in a situation like that would be to address the person as though it were coming from their mother, saying, "That's rude." And she said it in a manner that would apply to a man or a woman for behavior that isn't correct, no matter whom it's directed at. And it kind of took the sexuality out of their whole remark and situation, because a person, it's easier to take criticism of not being professional or not being grown up or maybe a bad boy, you're now rude, rather than being accused of being sexist. You know, it's a little easier to be less defensive. Mm-hmm. And so I know part of this discussion is trying to get at things that are constructive that you can do forward to defuse things, and things that can reduce defensive reactions are always good.
Yeah.
That's part of it. The other remark I wanted to make is Deborah Tannenbaum's books about "You Just Don't Understand," and some of the deep differences between male brains and female brains, or the way we are brought up and our take on the world. Some of it seems to me to be more than just individual variation. I think there really are differences, and they're pretty deep, and they're complementary. They can be taken to be wonderful, just like East and West cultural differences can be merged and be wonderful. And so when I'm reacting with people in the office, I often try to make the most of the talents for some of the women in the organization. And I'm doing it in a way that is trying to elicit their power and ability that I don't have to complement what I can do. And it's working with a difference, but it's attributing a difference too. So there's a kind of stereotypical assessment involved that is uncomfortable but useful.
So it's certainly an ongoing debate what role nature has in this, but I will point out that nature also isn't binary. Like, these are, even if we assume that the question is testosterone, the curves for testosterone in men and women overlap. Like, it's two bell curves. And it's more effective, I find, to find the behavior, right, that rather than assume that women are going to be socially intelligent, because on average, if we measure a bunch of random people off the street in America, women will be on average more socially intelligent than men, and assume that the problem is social intelligence, and that we should be learning how to teach people social intelligence, because you're also going to find men who are extremely social intelligent. You're going to find women who have no sense of none of that at all. And that's all it takes to have it stop being stereotypical, is to make it about the individual in front of you and just take that step back. It also, I find it helpful to talk about things in terms of masculine, things that are cultured as masculine and things that are cultured as feminine instead of women and men. Because these are also things where you have very feminine men and you have masculine women. And you'll have feminine traits that are devalued by society. And it's not just that women are devalued by society, though they may be, it's that feminine traits are devalued by society. And so men may have chosen not to develop those because they're not valued by society. And so if we make them valued in our organization, if we think they're useful, we should value them in our organization, and then we should encourage people to acquire those. And all of a sudden, it stops being about which box are we in. We can keep the useful parts without making it about a sorting hat, right?
This almost gets recursive in that I'm sitting there debating whether I should ask a question or not. So you struck a chord about 5 minutes ago when you were talking about sort of the problem-solving aspect, and you mentioned the idea that since there isn't a set of obvious actionable steps, then the problem must not exist. My question is more about the flip side of that, mm-hmm. where it's like imposing a set of logical actionable steps, sort mm-hmm. of a white knight syndrome. Is that something you see? Is that a real thing?
Ah, yes, the white knight. So this is something that it does come up. It almost always comes up because people have acquired the steps and aren't willing to listen still. And haven't realized that it's about them. Yeah, this is one of the things I talked about yesterday, is that it should ideally be as much about your discomfort, because once you see these things, you can't unsee them. Once you start noticing that people reach for bitch as an insult, you aren't gonna stop noticing that that has gendered connotations, even if before you had never noticed it. And I think that there are times when you'll encounter white knights. It happens most often, in my experience, at super activist groups where they are committed, and especially among academics, because they believe that they know more. You'll encounter these activist academics who believe they know more. And then they encounter a bunch of women, right, in their everyday life, outside of organizations like this, who have lived in different environments and are relatively privileged themselves and have never had to question these things, and that's most of who they interact with, is other women who do know less about gender than they do. And then they start thinking themselves an expert on women's experiences, and then you end up in this situation where you're mansplaining. You are explaining to people how their activism would be more effective if they only did X or Y or Z. If you were just less abrasive, if you just complained less, if there was more. And what they miss is the personal responsibility of this. If you want there to be less abrasive people talking about feminism, talk about feminism and don't be abrasive. And that's great. Go do that. That would be fantastic. You're probably going to get some criticisms from people. But that's what we're signing up for, right? One of the things we sign up for when we try to change things is for people to tell us that they don't want to change. So I encourage all of the men who I meet not to be scared of being called a white knight, but instead to expect that at some point you're going to cross that line while you're figuring out how to do this. That at some point you're going to make mistakes, you're going to piss women off. I interrupt women. I talk over them sometimes. I'm aggressive and assertive. I get really frustrated when I'm talking to women sometimes who are still coming into their own consciousness, coming into their own awareness, or really sure that who are really excited about the way things are right now, or who are really excited because they're not like all those other women. You know, they're really good. They're not like all those other women. And I'm partially frustrated because I was there. Yeah, when I was a little, I loved the Dragon Song books by Anne McCaffrey, where she goes on and on about how all these other women are terrible at music, but she's great, just like all the guys. And so I think that instead of being afraid of that feedback, is to listen to and accept that feedback, and to be more curious about trying things out. And I'm sure that's terrifying. Like that's a really hard thing I'm asking of people, is to step outside and expect to have women tell you you're doing feminism wrong. But it's your movement too. So yeah, that's sort of where I'm at with that. I have a whole long, like, it's like 5 pages of the fundamental problems that lead to that, but and how to address some of those. But I think that more important is being willing to understand that at some point you're going to be a white knight.
Oh, so I had, we're kind of sharing, right?
Yeah.
Mine is more kind of how do I entertain myself with this whole thing, because quite frankly you're dealing with it every day, right? And it starts to wear you down. And so just to keep myself mentally stimulated, I'm bearing my soul here. So what I'll do to keep myself, like, keep the humor alive is, you know, all those little compliments and kind of typically male behaviors and analogies, right? So there's a lot of sports references, there's a lot of military references, the way, you know, you come into work in the way that you're kind of welcomed for the day. Oh, you look really nice today. That is, you know, whereas the way they greet the guys is different. So what I've started doing just when I'm in the mood is I do the same thing in reverse. So one of them is, I have a weakness for just, like, very intricate sweaters. I love them. I'm a total sucker for them. And so I'll wear them to work, and people are like, oh, what a lovely sweater. Did you knit that? And I don't knit. I really don't. My grandmother and my mom do, but I don't knit. And I'm like, no, but thank you. And so what I started doing is anytime a guy wears a sweater to work, I'll be like, what a beautiful sweater. Did you knit that? You know? And of course, they're like, no, but I actually, a guy on my team, it turns out that he did. And I was like, that is the coolest thing to see. So there is that. And then the other one is, you know, like on Monday morning and you come in and everybody's talking about their weekend. And I always felt kind of uncomfortable about sharing what my weekend was, because, like, all the guys are like, oh yeah, I went to, you know, watch the game, and I went and, you know, played a round of golf and all that other stuff. And I'm like, well, I didn't do any of that stuff, and I can't actually even share in the conversation because I don't play golf. And so I was like, well, screw this. So I started telling him, I was like, I got the best petty on Saturday. You would not look at these toes. Look at this. And I don't know. They're kind of used to it now, but it's it makes me laugh.
I think that's a great way of sort of laying claim to a space. Yeah. Because why shouldn't you be able to talk about the awesome things you did that weekend? You know, not everyone is interested in their sports references or their deep Unix conversations. Like, yeah.